This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In the studio with me for her first show in the new year, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, and we are discussing the importance of sleep. I don't know how many of you have actually made New Year resolutions to get more sleep. I think a lot of us aspire to do that. Doesn't quite happen most of the time, but what are the consequences and how will this impact the brain going forward in older age? Dr. Azlina is here to explain. Dr. Azlina, what are the structures within the brain that are actually involved with sleep? Could you explain to us?
Well, Happy New Year, Mira.
Happy New Year.
So actually this topic came about because it's part of my New Year resolution. So I wanted to do a little bit of reading up on it. So the brain structures, actually there are many, many different brain structures that are involved. I suppose the one that is most talked about is the part of the brain which is involved in releasing all the hormones that are required to regulate the sleep cycle. So the part of the brain called the hypothalamus, and also the pineal gland, which is the structure that releases melatonin, of course, that everybody's heard about.
And when you say sleep cycle, we often talk about the body clock, the circadian rhythm. Mm. What is that? Could you go back to basics and explain to us what that really is?
Sure.
So, because I'm sure that's in total whack at the moment.
Yeah.
Given the lives that we lead.
Yes.
What does that mean today?
The circadian rhythm is basically daily rhythm. It's a cyclical kind of pattern that regulates our body functions. So things like our blood pressure, our body temperature, when we feel hungry, when are we more likely to have bowel movements, and even not just daily, but also monthly, like the female menstrual cycle. So those are all controlled by very, very tight regulation of the release of certain proteins or hormones that, you know, when you have an increase in the level of this particular hormone, that then kickstarts the whole process of certain things happening in our body. That hormone then naturally, the level then decreases through the day. And then, so then, you know, that then causes other events to happen. So it happens in a very regulated cycle of events.
And so there's a certain hormone that sort of triggers sleep as well?
Yeah, so melatonin is one that's thought to increase drowsiness. But then it's not just melatonin. Melatonin is one of the major ones, but then you also have to suppress other hormones that are thought to also cause wakefulness. So there's one which is the orexin, which I think many people may have heard of orexin. It's quite widely talked about in terms of controlling appetite, but it also has a role to play in, you know, arousal in terms of wakefulness. So as the melatonin levels rise during the day to make us feel more drowsy, more sleepy, then you also need to suppress the other hormones that control your wakefulness and arousal. So it's kind of, you know, like a balance between a number of different hormones and chemicals.
So besides the hormones, are there genes and neurotransmitters that play a role in triggering sleep and the sleep cycle?
Yeah, so the genes that involved will be the ones that control the changes in the levels of these hormones. So we have a whole array of genes, really. And I think the ones that are most famous are the ones that they call purr and cry. And what these do is that they control other genes that control the production of these hormones and proteins that then have a knock-on effect on whether or not you feel drowsy or awake.
So do they work in tandem with the hormones as
yes,
well?
Yes, okay. So they control the production of the hormones.
Sure.
Yeah.
So now we were born with everything in balance, I'm assuming. So now that we have knocked this equilibrium completely off, what does that mean for the brain?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have the issue where they feel they don't get enough sleep, and you know, the kind of foggy feeling that you feel, you know, when you don't have enough sleep, and you can feel how ineffective you are, right, in your daily life. And so, of course, sleep in itself has been quite a mysterious kind of field in neuroscience. People always thought nothing happened, you know, for many, many years, people thought that when you sleep, nothing happens. But then, of course, now we know that the brain is still very active during sleep. And in the early part of sleep research, I suppose people wanted to know, well, what's going on with sleep? And so there was quite a lot of work in understanding how sleep can help to strengthen certain memories. But now people are sort of looking more into what happens when you're deprived of sleep, mm-hmm. because they recognize that that's becoming an issue with this generation. Especially, I think I spoke about it in one of the earlier shows that we had about the usage of handphones at night, mm-hmm. and of course the exposure to blue light and all that. Heightened emotional state that you're in just before sleep can also have an impact on the quality of sleep that you're having. Now the research is sort of moving into, well, what happens to your brain when you don't get enough of sleep? And there have been a number of studies that have been looking at that.
Okay. So does it make a difference whether it depends on your gender or your age? Does that make a difference as to how much sleep you get and the impact on the brain?
Yes.
Because it would feel like you do much better.
If you're a mother, you probably say yes.
And your age, when you're younger, you seem to be managing the lack of sleep even better than when you're older, for an example.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're younger, you manage it, you just push through it, I think, because you've got so many things going on. I think when you're older, as the body is changing, it may be more difficult for, your body to cope. I mean, I know that there are certain people who sort of say that they're morning larks or night owls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think there have been studies that have shown that teenagers have quite a distinctly different pattern of a sleep cycle compared to older adults. And of course, younger children, younger children, they tend to sleep longer hours.
With the teenagers, I think the study said that they should start school about an hour later.
That's right, like 10 or 11.
That's right.
Actually, that's better for their brain. Because making them sort of study at 8 in the morning, and it's sort of going against the natural kind of balance that's happening in their brain. But
so we would go back then for the understanding of the hormone levels. Mm. And the neurotransmitters and the genes at that age.
At that age,
okay.
Yeah.
So now it makes sense.
Yeah, right? So I think like in Malaysia, of course, we start quite early. And I remember reading somewhere that said, okay, if you want them to start early, but kind of start with the slightly lighter subjects and maybe after recess, which is normally after 10:30 or 11, then you start on the kind of more analytical or, heavier memorization things. I don't know whether that's sort of closely followed. Probably quite difficult to do that in terms of
timetabling.
Timetabling, yeah. But certainly, I mean, there have been studies that have indicated that, during development and also in aging, your preference of when you wake up and when you sleep changes. And that is directly related to actually, it's somewhat out of your control as well. I mean, I know for example, myself, when I was younger, I probably would have said I'm more of a night owl. But now with, different circumstances and responsibilities, I am okay with being a morning lark,
yeah.
But I do know that some people are very, very much one or the other.
How do you think you made that change happen?
It wasn't voluntary. It happened to me because, kids go to school and you got to wake up and, they got to get dressed and have breakfast. So, and then we also have work. And so we're working late at night to kind of, finish things off. So, you kind of, I think that happens to everybody, you're burning, they call it burning both ends of the candle.
Yep.
Is it? So,
it can be altered. Whether you're a morning person, whether you feel you're a morning person or a night owl, it can be changed.
I think circumstances will force you to change it. But of course, whether or not you wake up happy and not grumpy
makes a difference.
Will make a difference, yeah.
Okay, all right, that's interesting. What about memory formation? How does sleep affect your memory?
Yeah, because I remember during like my time before exams, everybody used to say, if you want to remember something, make sure you read it before you sleep. Didn't
yes.
anybody say that
yep.
to you?
Mm-hmm. And they said, or read it out and record it and play it while you're going to sleep.
Yeah.
It just as you're, apparently it gets absorbed just as you're falling asleep in that stage.
And I was always very curious about why would that be? Why would it be that just before sleep, whatever I learn just before sleep or think about just before sleep has an effect during sleep? So that part, I think people haven't really looked at in so much detail, but there have been a number of studies that have looked at quite clearly that shows that something is happening during sleep at your synapses with your neuronal activity, and even more so that there are changes in the pattern of brain wave activity during sleep, and altogether that has a role to play in strengthening synapses. You know, so the term that they tend to use is the consolidation of memory. So basically something that a fresh memory, a new memory, and you want to make it a strong memory. You want to remember that. So to consolidate, to incorporate that fresh memory into your network of memories or into your brain network so that then you can make a connection so that you can retrieve it more easily. So
that's dependent on good sleep.
So you need sleep for that to happen. Yeah. And
so that's a reason why we all can't remember things anymore.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, I think not only are we depriving ourselves in terms of maybe quality of sleep, but also the duration of the sleep is much shorter. So the process by which that consolidation needs to happen, it's just not being given enough time, right? They've shown that actually during sleep, you actually replay some of the memories that you encounter during your wakeful periods. There was a study looking at rats. They trained rats on a particular task that they had to find something in an environment. They were recording from the brain cells while they were learning that task. And then when they then recorded from the same brain cells when the rats were asleep, they saw the exact same pattern and even the same sequence of pattern of neuronal activity, just as when the rats were actually doing the activity. So it's like, you know, like you're replaying that episode in your head. So you can imagine that, you know, they always say that if you want to have a good memory or if you want to remember things, you know, you need to repeat it, you need to go over it, you need to somehow try to associate it with things. So, you know, maybe during that replaying, the brain is sort of trying to strengthen that particular
consolidate
memory.
It.
And also try to sort of fit it into what happened the rest of the day, right? To sort of try to make sense of, well, that particular episode, you know, how does it fit into what else happened?
And if you don't get that quality sleep, chances are it probably won't happen properly.
Yes. And they've done a similar study in humans, but what they did was they also got humans to try to remember the position of things. You give them a grid and then you have to remember the position of the red dots. And as they are learning that, they give them, a aromatherapy almost, right? So they let them smell lemons and oranges and that kind of thing. And then during sleep, they expose them to the same scent, right? And then they then tested them to see how well did they remember that the location of those dots. And they found that, statistically speaking, that there was a significant difference when you actually exposed them to the same smell while they were sleeping. So, you know, it kind of fits into the kind of replay kind of thing. So if you smell that if you smell the same thing that you smelt while you were doing something during your wakeful times, maybe it's sort of activating those brain cells that were active during the period when you're trying to form that memory.
Okay, very interesting. We'll come back and find out about this whole something called drainage system. I mean, we always know that when we sleep, there's a lot happening in the brain. It's repairing, it's rejuvenating. And, you know, sometimes it even tells you at a certain time to certain time, this is actually happening. At 4 a.m., I know your face is actually, you know, fixing and trying to look better. But so if you're up at 4 o'clock, I don't know what that means. So I think there's a book called The 4 a.m. CEO or something.
Is it?
How CEOs, prominent ones around the world, all wake up really early in the morning and I've always wondered what's happening to them.
That's right. I mean, wasn't there the story that I think Margaret Thatcher, that she only got by with 4 hours sleep or
yes.
whatever.
Yeah. Now some people get by and they're fine. And some of us are totally sleep deprived with 4 hours.
That's
we'll come
right.
back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist in the studio. We're discussing the importance of sleep. For those of you who are very concerned about your health, well, maybe you should be listening to this because we do know sleep affects a lot of things in our daily lives, our physical health, emotional health, all of that. And we're trying to understand on a hormonal level, on a gene and neurotransmitter level, what's actually going on. And actually, it goes back to very much how sleep affects that equilibrium. Mm. And so you have spoken a lot about the whole idea of when you say you're a morning person or you're a night person and how you personally manage to alter that, Dr. Azlina. In my mind, it probably says you're not. Given the choice or the circumstance, you will have to change it. You will do it. Yeah. Right? Whether or not you wake up happy, as you said, is a different question.
Oh, grumpy,
yeah. Yes.
I'm like, don't talk to me before 7. Just let me get on with it. And then
coffee always helps.
And then I'm more of a...
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I'm okay.
Then you spoke about the body clock and how that, you know, whether that really exists and how that's probably in whack at the moment. How it affects our brain. How, in terms of gender and age, there is a difference in the sleep requirement and how, when you should be sleeping. Mm. And also importance of sleep when it comes to memory formation. Let's now go on to talk about the drainage system. We know that certain things or the brain fixes a lot of things when we're asleep. Now, when that quality of sleep is disrupted, what happens then to that drainage system?
Yeah, so our brain actually has a very efficient waste clearance mechanism. So our brain is not really afloat, but it's surrounded by fluid known as a CSF or cerebrospinal fluid. And that helps with cushioning the brain from any injury. And it also helps to distribute certain neurotrophic factors, so factors that the brain cells need to survive. So it helps to distribute it, you know, throughout the brain. It helps to stabilize the pH and, you know, the acidity and that kind of, you know, and alkaline in the brain. And not only that, now it's sort of also more and more understood to be critically important in this waste clearing mechanism. So, and what it does is it secretes all the chemicals and solutes that can't readily pass the blood-brain barrier. So it needs to get out of the brain because naturally, as our cells do their thing, they will produce certain waste products, and those waste products need to be removed from the brain. And so there have been some latest research to show that a new mechanism has been identified. It was first identified in mice, and then now it's also been shown to be similar in humans.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what happens? You spoke about the cerebral spinal fluid. Mm-hmm. How does this cleaning process happen?
Yeah, so actually we produce about 500 mils. That's like a...
Half a liter.
Yeah, like a small...
Mineral water bottle
worth every day, total volume. And there's a turnover of about four times. So in total, we make about 500 mils a day. And that happens throughout the day. But what they found that was really amazing was that the channels by which the fluid flows, like the longkang lah, or the drains, mm-hmm. right? Actually, those drains actually increase in size by about 60% during sleep. So you imagine that,
right.
You know, if you're trying to clear out the fluid, it actually makes it easier to clear the waste during sleep. And that very, very distinctly happens at night during sleep time.
So when you don't sleep well or you don't sleep enough?
That process still may happen, but it just doesn't happen as effectively, right? So for example, I was explaining this to my husband the other day and the analogy that I normally give is like, you know, the garbage collectors, right, that come. So for example, on Monday, you have a certain amount of rubbish that you produce. But let's say on Monday something happens, the lorry breaks down and the garbage truck doesn't come, right? But you still have Monday's rubbish in front of your house. And then Tuesday comes along. Of course, you have Tuesday rubbish, so you add it onto the Monday rubbish. But the garbage truck only has a limited capacity. And they can only remove one bag at a time, let's say. So you're still left with the bag that they didn't pick up. And over time, of course, if they continually not pick that up, you know what happens to that rubbish? The things in there start to decay, it starts to leak, it gets smelly. You know, so you can sort of imagine that what happens at night is that these garbage trucks, that come around at night, they're double the volume. So they will clear up everything that you left out, you know, the ones that they forgot the day before or whatever leakage, they'll kind of clear it up nicely so that then by the time Wednesday comes along, you know, you have a nice empty bin that can be cleared out well the following day. So you can imagine that if, you know, you don't allow that process to happen, there will be, you know, long-term effects how the neurons, you know, the health of the neurons, because, you know, they're then constantly surrounded by this waste product.
Okay, yeah. So there's also a recent paper that suggests that one night of poor sleep can cause beta amyloid levels to increase.
Yes.
And when you say beta amyloid, you immediately think of Alzheimer's.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I know, I freaked out when I read that because I thought, oh my God, one night of sleep, like everybody has one night of poor sleep, don't they? And the thought that just one night can actually have such a dramatic effect, because we always, I think that if we have work to do, you know, we'll do an all-nighter and we'll kind of just catch up on sleep on the weekend,
yeah.
Or perhaps you'll have a little nap, you know, later or something, and you think, okay, you know, I'll feel better. But actually what this paper showed was that, I mean, and this was work that was just published last year, 2018, by a group in America, in Boston, led by scientist Volkov. And what they did was, of course, as you mentioned, beta amyloid accumulation has been linked to causing dementia and also Alzheimer's disease. And actually, not just beta amyloid, but across the board, many neurodegenerative disorders like Parkinson's and even the rarer ones like prion disease, you tend to get an accumulation, an abnormal accumulation of these proteins, which then are thought to have a toxic effect on the neurons. So,
is that the waste point you were making just now?
No, these ones are not part of the waste. These are separate.
Okay.
These are
is not the waste clearance mechanism.
No, this is not the waste. The waste are a natural byproduct of the cell. These abnormal proteins that form are due to other things. So either due to environmental effects or due to you have a genetic predisposition to generating these abnormally formed proteins.
How strong is this research, though, Dr. Aslena?
So they looked at 20 people, and what they did was they sleep deprived them for 31 hours, right? And then what they did was they imaged their brain. So they looked at their brain using this thing called a PET scan, and the PET scan is able to detect levels of beta amyloid in the brain, right? So very, very precise measurement. And they found that there were certain changes in the levels that they can see. Like, you know, I'm sure many people have seen pictures of the brain where you show brain activity and you have certain areas lighting up more than others. So something similar to that. But in this case, they would be looking specifically at the beta amyloid protein. And so they found that after this sleep deprivation, one night of sleep deprivation. There you go. See, I had.
You didn't get enough sleep last night.
Obviously, not enough. Not 7 hours. Yeah. and so what they found was that it can cause a 5% increase. Right. So to put that into perspective, and they do that in the paper quite nicely, they say that if you were to compare a young adult brain and an older adult, so the difference in the level of accumulation, because you can also see beta amyloid accumulation also in healthy elderly individuals. So not necessarily
sleep deprived,
not necessarily those that have dementia or Alzheimer's. Actually, you can get it in over 80s. They may also have some beta amyloid accumulation. But if you were to compare between a young brain and an older brain, the difference would be about 17%. So meaning that during aging, okay, you tend to accumulate beta amyloid.
So how then do you tell that it's because you never got enough sleep?
Well, in this particular study, because they chronically subjected the person to a long period of no sleep. But yes, that's one of the things that they do discuss, that beta amyloid accumulation is not just because you don't get enough sleep throughout your life. There are many other reasons. But what this paper was trying to link it to was that how important sleep is, that just one night of not enough sleep can cause an effect. So in perspective, if you were to go from a normal elderly brain to, and you look at one who does have dementia, you see a difference of about 40%, 20 to 40%, but compared to 5% increase to what you see from one night of her sleep deprivation. Right. So what they also say is that in their paper, that they don't know whether or not, okay, let's say you're sleep deprived and then after that, maybe you make it up. Does that somehow clear it? They don't know yet.
So you cannot catch up on the sleep?
It's too early to say, I guess, but whether or not you go from 5% to 0% if you get enough sleep, or whether or not it reduces it from 5 to 1, that hasn't been looked at yet.
So, you know, we've spoken about neurodegenerative diseases at length with a whole load of people. And it's come up that your health in midlife plays a huge role in neurodegenerative diseases when you're older. So you need to eat well, you need to be healthy, you need to exercise and all of that. So does that mean that the good quality of sleep that you get in midlife is going to determine how well you do in older age as well? And because I'm thinking young people are always sleep deprived. They're partying, they're clubbing, you know, of that. Why are we so forgiving? Why is the brain so forgiving when it comes to them and not terribly forgiving of, you know, the older person?
Yeah.
So what's actually going on here? I mean, in terms of age and how we deal with this?
Yes, so there are many things that happen as we age. And if you look at the understanding of what is happening, is what is tipping us over the edge to sort of start these neurons to start degenerating when you are, you know, 50, 60 years old, and then only then 20 years later do you start to show the symptoms, is because the cells themselves are also undergoing an aging process. So there's a threshold in which the cell can cope with certain changes that are happening in the cell, certain increase in levels of, you know, abnormal protein accumulation, waste that it has around it, it can cope. But then after a while, it can no longer cope with all those things. And so that's when then it starts this sort of gradual process in losing its function and survival.
Okay, so your advice would be get enough sleep in midlife.
Do all those things that you mentioned, you know? I mean, not just
I forgot to include hug.
Yes.
Don't forget to hug.
But I think, yeah, I mean, nowadays, whenever I talk to anybody, you know, I always tell them, you know, do you know that, you know, midlife, you've got to look after, you know, yourself in midlife. Don't wait till you retire. And, you know, only then do you want to start being healthy. You know, actually, it really is more and more now that the research is showing that 20 years before you start to see these late onset neurodegenerative diseases, you really need to look after, you know, your gut health, your overall health, the food that you're eating, the sleep that you're getting. That's all really coming together now to sort of say, how do we age healthily and effectively?
Especially the brain, isn't it? The gut microbiome and how that affects the brain as well. There's a lot of research going into that too.
That's right.
Which is quite fascinating, really.
That's true.
And what about naps? A lot of people say, you know, nap and it's good for you. It helps. What do you think? And culturally, this is recommended in, you know, you got siestas, and among the Italian people, Chinese people, Japanese people, you know, a lot of them do nap in the afternoons, for an example. I mean, what's your take on that?
I think it's great if you can find time to do it. I know that in certain workplaces, as you mentioned, in Japan and also in China, it's actually law to allow your work staff to have an hour off to sleep. I think in Japan they call it inimuri, and I don't know what it's called in China. And also in Islam, they also have a similar thing whereby they recommend afternoon nap, so after lunch, between 12 to 2, I think. So sort of, you know, the same time as what the Japanese and Chinese are recommending. And as you mentioned, in Spain and also in Italy, you know, they do it typically after lunch. They have their siestas. So from what I would imagine, that having a nap would perhaps enable the consolidation of memory, at least to start it off. Because one of the things that they were saying, that when you want to strengthen these particular fresh memories that you're getting in your brain, is that you need a kind of off period whereby the brain isn't distracted with what else is happening. so that it can focus on, you know, strengthening what it just learned. So if you can sort of, you know, take a little bit of time out during the day just to help allow the brain to take some time to do that process, then, you know, perhaps it will help in terms of remembering things. Not only that, but there could be also some scientific basis behind the fact that when you're having these naps, that's also helping to clear some of these hormones that may be affecting this balance, right? So perhaps this other hormone known as adenosine, for example. So if you are able to sort of maintain the balance of that particular hormone, it helps you to sort of feel awake better. So they recommend 20 minutes to half an hour power naps, as they call it, right? Yep. Helps to sort of, you know, regulate this hormone levels. And so together with the consolidation of the memory, you know, maybe that will help in making us remember things better. But if you can do it, great. But, you know, is it really
some of us sleep applicable? For more than, not even power, it's very powerful. It's way too long. What about those who get too much sleep? I mean, what does that do to the brain, though?
Well, you know, we know that we need to be exposed to certain light periods during a 24-hour day in order to kickstart the production of these hormones and so on and so forth. So if you delay exposure to light by a large amount, right? So let's say you're sleeping 16 hours, let's say, you're not allowing your brain to reset according to this 12-hour light, 12-hour dark period, then your hormones would then be out of balance because they're not kind of being told when to stop being produced, when to be produced, and over a long-term period, that's going to have a knock-on effect.
Okay. When you talk about...
It's great to think that, you know, we could sleep for long periods and not
having... I wish.
but, I mean, I'm sure even people who say that they sleep a lot, they don't particularly feel that healthy either. You know, and of course, if you sleep a lot, you're also inactive. So then that can also lead to weight gain.
So how would you conclude in terms of your message as far as the importance of sleep is concerned? I mean, it's a new year. We've all got resolutions. But reality is
it does
impact the brain. I mean, it goes back to, as you said, the hormone levels, the neurotransmitters and the genes that, you know, function in the brain.
Yeah, it has a direct impact.
Yeah. So what's your message?
My message is, I mean, I think as much as possible, do try to plan your day so that you can at least have at least 6 hours of solid sleep. They recommend, of course, people between the ages of, say, 30 to 50 or 60 to at least get between 7 to 8 good quality hours of sleep. Try to put that phone away. Try to, you know, really understand that, you know, you can't always go on these sort of night benders and think that, you know, you can catch up, because now it's showing that being sleep deprived does have long-term consequences on the brain. So it's just being mindful, I think, like in the new year, just be mindful of, you know, what you're doing to your body and how you can help it. You know, you can eat healthily, you can have exercise, but, you know, this is also another component that you need to think about.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, speaking to us about the importance of sleep this January.
Have a good one tonight.
In our new year, 2019, our new resolutions to sleep well on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.